Scotia with a look at the race in the riding of South Shore St. Margaret. It appears to be a two-person race in South Shore St. Margaret's.
And you're listening to the NCRA's Alternative Election 2025 coverage, and we have another local station coming in here. We have CHMR from St. John's talking about the election with some students and staff at Memorial University.
My name is Gabriella, and my co-host here,
I'm Lee. We will hear what some students and staff here at Memorial University campus have to say about the upcoming election.
It's my first time voting, so I am planning to vote. I think it's important to at least have a choice in the matter. I think it's also important to show up. So I'm going to have to figure out, past the research on the local and federal elections, just policies that will affect me, policies that will affect people around me, and see what fits best, and hopefully pray for a good term next time.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's like great things to guide you in voting. What would you maybe say to like first-time voters who are kind of like hesitant? Maybe they like don't want to vote.
I feel like it's a normal feeling to have, not to want to vote, because you kind of feel helpless. Be like, well, they're not gonna hear me out. My vote doesn't count in when accounted for in the masses. But just doing a bit of research really does go a long way. I feel like you can start off with just researching what will affect you in the next year or two, financially, academically, and see if you are okay with what the policies might turn out. Even if it doesn't affect you, I think it's still important to have an idea of what's going on around you.
Yeah, absolutely. And can I ask, you don't have to answer, who do you plan to vote for? Do you know?
I think locally I'm going for NDP. I'm still on the fence for federal, just because even if I do want to vote for NDP federally, I know they're not like, they don't have the best stats right now.
Yeah. For sure. I know a lot of people are talking about like strategic voting because they don't want the conservatives to get in. Yeah. But people forget that you have to check who's like the majority in your riding. So like, for example, one of my friends is from Lab City, and they like in terms of ideology, they lean a lot more conservative, but since they have so many trades there, they're very like into unions. So everybody there votes NDP, which is really interesting. But I've seen people talk about like strategic voting, and they just blindly vote liberal instead of like checking who's the majority in their riding. So I think it's definitely very important for people to do their research, as you were saying.
Yeah, I think it's also interesting how some people were, they go past strategic voting and they go more of like exactly the qualifications of who they're voting for, which kind of, it's kind of a blind side to it, because I'm like, okay, they got great qualifications, but what are their policies like?
Yeah.
What are they actually going to do?
Yeah, like great resume, but like do you live up to it?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Anyways, thank you so much.
No, thank you. Thank you.
Hi, nice to meet you. My name is Gabriella.
Hello, Gabriella.
How are you doing today?
Good, thank you.
So, the elections are taking place right now. Why do you think voting is important to people?
Why do I think voting is important? Because we all got to have a say in who. Don't complain if you didn't vote. If you didn't vote, like don't complain.
Yeah.
Right? If you're not going to, if you're going to complain. If you didn't vote, don't complain.
Yeah, because voting makes us.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, if your party don't go in, you can complain too. But if you don't vote, don't complain at all.
So have you already voted?
Yes, we did. When Sunday, Pat?
Good Friday,
in Village Mall.
Oh, that's really good to know.
Yeah.
And it's good to know that you know that making a change means you have to vote, because if you don't vote for the people you find worthy of the position.
Exactly. Then you can't complain. I always said that if you didn't vote, don't complain.
Yeah, that's
such right.
You know, so what would you hope from the party that you voted for?
I want to get rich. I want them to make me rich, but they won't. I'm still stuck in the bottom. Do what he says they're going to do.
Yeah.
Don't make these promises and then turn around and say, oh, I can't do this now and you can't do that.
Yeah.
If you're going to give us a raise or you're going to get rid of the carbon tax is gone, good. But don't come back in 6 months' time and stick it with something else, you crook.
Yeah.
Because then I'm going to be mad because the guy I voted for.
Yeah.
And I'm upset then.
Oh, okay.
Right, you know, so don't take off one tax and put on another one.
Another tax.
That's not helping us out a bit.
Okay, it was so nice chatting with you. And
you're
have
welcome.
A great day.
And you too, have a good day.
I voted NDP. I'm kind of scared for, like, the Conservatives to get in because, like, there's a lot of bills that Pierre Poilievre voted against that I don't exactly agree with. Yeah. And I feel like it won't be good for a lot of Canadians.
And that was students and staff from Memorial University St. John's. Back to you, Radio Sydney.
Thanks very much, Mun, my old alma mater, and those folks commenting, particularly the gentleman, reminded me of probably one of my relatives. Well, welcome back, Peter Wainwright, Bill Collins here on the West Coast version of the election coverage, alt election coverage. We have Jesse and Danny standing by. But first, Peter, I wanted to comment on some of the issues raised there, particularly around the carbon tax and the environment. So in terms of environmental policy, it was probably where we were seeing some of the sharpest contrasts between the parties in this election. How significant were these differences likely to be for voters?
Well, certainly Trump and sovereignty and the tariffs have dominated the headlines, but the environmental positions remain deeply important in specific parts of Canada, and they could significantly impact undecided voters, particularly in BC, parts of Quebec, and urban centers.
So let's start with the Liberals' platform. How were they positioning themselves on energy and climate?
Well, the Liberals are walking what they call a balanced approach. They pledge to continue developing clean and low-carbon conventional energy, including oil, with reduced emissions and intensity. And they're advancing a carbon border adjustment mechanism that aligns with similar policies by the European Union.
That carbon border policy is interesting. Essentially, you know, putting a price on imported goods based on their carbon footprint, correct?
Yeah. So this is not like a carbon tax on anything produced in Canada. This is actually a tariff on stuff coming into the country based on its carbon footprint.
So what about pipeline development? That's also been a contentious issue for many years, particularly in BC.
Okay, that is a big one. The Liberals maintain they'll support pipelines where the province and the First Nations support them. So that's essentially their current approach. They emphasize the need for proper consultation and environmental assessment while acknowledging the economic importance of getting resources to market.
Yeah, they're also talking about an east-west electricity grid. What's the significance there?
That one is actually a major economic and environmental policy. In 2023, Canada exported $3.2 billion worth of electricity to the states, while at the same time, other parts of Canada were importing $1.2 billion in electricity. So the Liberals argue that connecting our provincial electricity systems, like an east-west grid, would allow renewable power to flow more efficiently across the country and reduce our dependence on fossil fuels and the U.S.
And they're continuing their focus on consumer green initiatives?
That's correct. Like EV rebates got paused, but they're doubling down on electric vehicle incentives and green home retrofit programs, policies they argue are reducing emissions and saving Canadians money.
Wow. Now let's turn to the Conservatives. Their approach seems significantly different.
Yes, it is very different, Bill. The Conservatives have explicitly promised to roll back pretty much every Liberal climate policy adopted in the last decade. So that's the net zero framework, industrial carbon pricing, electric vehicle sales mandates, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it certainly would be quite enlightening now that we know or we believe the Liberal government has been called, albeit we're not quite sure, as you just pointed out earlier, if we're heading into minority territory and what that might actually bring to the table. What about the regulatory environment for resource management?
Well, the Conservatives have pledged to fast-track pipeline approvals and repeal the Impact Assessment Act, formerly Bill C-69, which they've called the No More Pipelines Act. They argue that the current environmental assessment processes are unnecessary and they delay critical infrastructure.
Yeah, they've also taken aim at production limits, which I know the Liberals had certain opinions on.
Yeah, they would scrap the production caps that the Liberals introduced. The Conservative argument is the caps hamper economic growth and that technology and market forces should determine production levels.
Yeah, I see. In an interesting move, they've also promised to bring back single-use plastics, which the Liberal government had been phasing out.
Yeah, they framed this both as an economic and practical freedom issue, arguing that it's created unnecessary hardship for businesses and consumers without any meaningful benefit.
Yeah, so how are those environmental policies playing out regionally? I wonder, can we see any a difference in the way calls for different environmental standards resonate regionally?
Yeah, so that's precisely what makes this kind of policy so interesting, Bill. In Alberta and Saskatchewan, this kind of approach to expanding oil and gas production without carbon constraints is very popular.
Yeah, Peter, it's quite interesting. And what about British Columbia? It's such a complex landscape.
Well, BC is fascinating. The coastal communities and the urban centers tend to prioritize marine protection and oppose increased tanker traffic. But the interior regions with forestry and mining interests are more receptive to less regulatory oversight. And the Liberal approach of supporting pipelines with conditions is not really appealing to either group.
And Quebec?
Environmental protection consistently polls higher as a priority in Quebec than most other provinces. The conservative rollback of climate policies could cost them there, particularly in the urban centers.
Well, it strikes me that environmental differences are also reflecting some fundamental differences in the visions of Canada's economic future.
Yeah. That's an important insight. The Liberals are essentially betting on a transition where Canada remains an energy producer but gradually shifts to lower carbon options and electricity exports while developing these carbon border measures. The Conservatives, though, are looking at a traditional oil and gas development as basically a cornerstone of prosperity and that it's being unnecessarily constrained.
And how do you think it impacted undecided voters?
Well, for those making up their minds, the environmental policies are a major difference between those two parties. Accelerated resource development with less regulations than the Conservatives, or a Liberal approach that's more measured with emission constraints and incentives to do a green transition.
Wow. For stations with local broadcasting, we will see you on the other side at the top of the hour. But before we get to that, I'd like to bring in our intrepid folks from CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby.
Thank you. This is Jesse Wensloff from CJSF.
And this is Danny Nesvedarani from CJSF.
We have sort of breaking news in that NDP leader Jagmeet Singh has announced that he is stepping down as party leader after losing 17 seats with a 5.9% share of the vote, down 11.9% from the previous election. And he is all but confirmed to be losing his seat in Burnaby Central in a distant third place behind Wade Chang of the Liberals and James Yan of the Conservatives. I mean, not entirely surprising given the results, but still a bit of a shock. Hey, Danny?
Yeah, a bit of a shock. I think it's the kind of thing where you sort of see it coming, but when it finally does happen, and, you know, the fact that it has just happened means that it sort of, I don't want to say puts a nail in the coffin, but I think it sort of just confirms what we've been seeing with this specific election in terms of the NDP's performance.
Yeah, support has really just plummeted precipitously, and you know, that can be related to the Liberal surge and the global trade war and so many other factors. Also, it seems like a fairly disorganized election campaign overall from the NDP, and things kind of felt like everything that could go wrong did.
Absolutely. I think, especially in BC specifically, a lot of it was a matter of never just being able to control that narrative. You know, I think we discussed how a couple weeks into the campaign trail, there were signs up saying BC votes NDP to leave out the Conservatives or something to that effect. And it was sort of them trying to weaponize or utilize this narrative of strategic voting in their favor, because there are many NDP strongholds within the Lower Mainland historically. However, in this case, it does not seem to be panning out. Jenny Kwan is currently slated to win her riding, but in terms of other NDP strongholds, it's a bit of a toss-up, and also just not looking good in other ridings as well.
Yeah, Don Davies in Vancouver Kingsway now trailing by 0.2% of the vote. As mentioned before, Peter Julian of the NDP in New Westminster, Burnaby Myardville, the incumbent now a distant third. Only one riding in Greater Vancouver currently showing NDP leading, and three in the province, which is a huge drop from previous elections.
Wow, thanks. It's been a dramatic shift, particularly in the leadership role, where Jagmeet Singh has obviously announced his stepping down. The question mark I submit, Peter, around Poilievre. And of course, let's not forget how Elizabeth May and her party will fare. Barry Rourke, over to you.
Yeah, Elizabeth May leading and winning her seat there. Looks as though Pierre Poilievre is working towards taking to the stage shortly to make a statement here. I think he's waiting for Singh to wrap up before he makes a statement. Taking a quick look at Carleton, the riding that surrounds a lot of the Ottawa Valley area, Bruce Fanjoy is sitting at 51.6%, leading Poilievre currently at 45%. So right now we're sitting at a 2,100 vote difference. There is 130 of 266 polls remaining. So obviously a lot of time for that to adjust and change. But that is another one that we're still watching and riding. And of course, there's a few other of those areas that we're seeing some really interesting tight races happening right now in Ontario. Brampton Centre is a great example of that one, as we're about to head to our break in a few moments. With 134 of 183 reporting, Liberal incumbent Soti is sitting at 79.4%, less than 200 votes ahead of Chatel from the Conservatives at 47.4%. So very, very tight in a number of these other spaces that will go down later on into the evening here. So I'll toss this back to you, Bill, as we prepare to head to a local break.
Thanks, Peter. We have about 30 seconds before we want to do the break. Peter, do you have anything to add?
Things are still looking pretty much the way they were. NDP are now down to only 7, definitely not going to keep their official party status. And it looks like the Liberals picked up one of the ones the NDP lost.
Wow. So again, a very dramatic result from what's happening across Canada. Today, Election Day 2025, April the 28th, there will be lots of commentary, I'm sure, from the talking heads. But I'm really happy that the NCRA and NREC and the local communities across Canada with campus and community stations have been able to deliver a fabulous show tonight. We'll be back after the break.
We're back with our program on the Alt Election 2025 project coordinated by NCRA. And we have a couple more clips from local stations on the East and West Coast coming up. This first clip is from St. Augustine in Quebec, coming from CJAS.
You're listening to Alt Election 2025, a national election broadcast series produced by stations across the country exploring underrepresented voices, emerging issues, and alternative perspectives in the lead-up to Canada's federal election on April 28. The initiative is supported by the Covering Canada Elections 2025 Fund in partnership with the Public Policy Forum, Rideau Hall Foundation, and the Michener Awards Foundation. Learn more at altelxn.ca.
Federal Election Day is this Monday, April 28th. We are a small English-speaking community in the vast riding of Côte-Nord-Kawalachikamak-Nitassanan. With no road access to our community and the region at large, it's common for people here to feel forgotten at a federal level. We face constant issues receiving medical and social services, developing our economy, and keeping young people in the region when they depart to seek trade training and or higher education. National crises reverberate to our small settlements, but underlying those conversations here is the concern that our own challenges and issues might be further left behind. We at CJAS Radio St. Augustine reached out to some local stakeholders in our community to hear about what concerns them in this race. Amongst our region's most persistent problems are transportation and food insecurity due to our isolation. So I reached out to the manager of one of our local retailers, Tracy Boland, who expressed the urgent need for better protection of our food supply and more streamlined processes when dealing with the issues endemic to our community.
Yeah, my name is Tracy Boland. I'm manager of Depener Riverview, and I deal with Depener LM and Elkwood Hardware. Well, it's the freight on time. None in damage. SCQ, like saying it in damage, we don't have to ask a lot of trouble to get our payment back for it or whatnot.
I also asked her about food prices in the region, but in the past few months, she says increases have been modest.
No, it's not too bad, actually. Some stuff, but not a whole lot.
Lying on the other side of the St. Augustine River is the Innu community of Pakwashipi. I reached out to one of their counselors and the deputy chief, Jacques Marc, to ask him about what issues are urgent for the Innu settlement, and he stressed the importance of infrastructure and investment.
Yeah, that's right. I'm a deputy chief. First of all, I want to say the government and federal, we like to work on budget money go to my community, Pakwashipi, to future, we go to a dam, we're going to do a dam, Hydro Quebec.
He also expressed frustration with the prorogating of Parliament earlier this year and how it's delayed the federal election and the critical government business that's been waiting on its conclusion.
We should done that right away, but now, maybe a couple months now, you know, Prime Minister, he gone to the mission, he give up working, but we relate to election.
The threats of tariffs and even annexation from the United States have loomed large in this election at a federal level. And here's what Tracy and Jacques had to say on the matter.
Yeah, I was concerned, like, for my customers, like, if they went up 25% more.
Government now, federal, the problem is, you know, Donald Trump, he wants to take it to Canada too, but we don't want that.
We also reached out to the municipality of St. Augustine, and its general director, Corrine Driscoll, gave us this message. The municipality of St. Augustine reminds everyone that April 28th, 2025 is Federal Election Day. This election is very important because the sovereignty and economy of Canada needs to be protected. Drop by the Catholic Church on Monday and vote for your candidate of choice to do the best job on protecting our country.
This episode is part of the Alt Election 2025, a national collaboration bringing diverse voices and critical conversations to the airwaves ahead of Canada's federal election. Don't forget to tune in to our live National Election Night broadcast on Monday, April 28th, and visit altelxn.ca for interviews, resources, and local station listings. A big thanks to our sponsors at the Covering Canada Election 2025 Fund, made possible through the Public Policy Forum, the Rideau Hall Foundation, and the Michener Awards Foundation. Thank you for listening. We'll see you on election night.
That was from the East Coast, CJAS. And we now have a quick clip from the West Coast here in Nelson, BC, from CJLY. And then we will be back at the top of the next hour with some updates from Pierre Polyev live right now. And we'll have our sign-offs with our hosts from Radio Sydney.
This is Stephanie Hendricks with CJLY, Kootenai Co-op Radio in Nelson, British Columbia. We asked our federal candidates in the Columbia Kootenai Southern Rockies riding how they were going to deal with Trump's threats and tariffs. We started out with Reggie Goldsberry, the Liberal candidate.
People we know, our neighbors, some of our neighbors will be losing their jobs, our costs. You know, food coming from the States or consumables will be going up. For the workers, we want to look into expanding programs like the like EI and making it where the barriers to entry, we've already made it where the one-week exemption for getting into the employment insurance will be waived so people can get money faster. I see ultimately evolving programs. I see us actually eventually getting to a point where a lot of the social programs we have in Canada will be put together more into a single payer system, and we'll have a universal basic income that we're ultimately working towards. But in the meantime, we need to make sure that the supports that are available are known, because there are a bunch that are available from the government at all levels, even provincial. For businesses, there can be reprieve in taxes or help to make it where we can weather these challenges, but these are real threats.
This is Rob Morrison with the Conservative Party.
It's really important, too, to be able to have a plan moving forward that deals with these businesses that are going to be hit hard, and on our counter tariffs, making sure that we give that money to those businesses that were disadvantaged.
Here is Kaylee Linz with NDP.
The first part is how are we supporting businesses? The NDP has proposed a cap on credit card transaction fees at 1%. And that's just one of those small, practical things. The other piece is standing strong behind retaliatory tariffs. I think it's absolutely critical that Canadians are united in this time and standing up to those threats. At the same time, as an NDP MP in the Kootenays, my concern is ensuring that our industries are not shouldering a disproportionate impact as a result of those retaliatory tariffs.
This is Jim Weidrick, an independent.
The key lever that the federal government has in helping all of us, consumers, citizens, or businesses, have for affordability and for allowing their enterprises to thrive is the tax system. I actually think our federal government has just gotten too big. We've increased the number of federal civil service workers by about 40% over the last 10 years. That can be trimmed, and the savings should then be reflected back in the tax system, either by lowering such things as the GST or income tax, or increasing rebates to folks, and that's a method. And then the other point that I've made a few times on the riding campaign circuit is that we managed as a federal government to designate $50 billion to electric battery manufacturers, but ultimately that amount of corporate subsidization is not panning out, as many of these programs are saying, oh, well, we can't start that plant after all. That's money that could be diverted and shared amongst all our small businesses.
This is Stephen Mafioli with the Green Party.
We'd like to stimulate our local economies by supporting local businesses first, and we would like to strengthen our international trade agreements and allies by creating new trade routes and new trade agreements with nations that are more like-minded and aligned with our values than the United States is. I feel like once we do that and we actually guarantee reliable trade partners who have the same values, we'll start to see